Welcome to Starfleet Universe On Call. I am Paul Franz, owner of Franz Games, of an SAP Online, FedCom Online, and Starfleet Warlord. Just when or how to join us with a podcast every Thursday night starting 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time. You can either call on the phone, just dial 605-562-0444. Just follow the directions. The call ID is 17702. Or you can participate on the web. Just go to the Talks website at www.talkshoe.com. Search for Quality 17702. And remember to bring your Chrome browser. And of course, if you want to, you can listen to me on Twitch. Twitch.tv/SFU on call. And you need to contact me for any reason. My email address is SFUONCALL@gmail.com. SFUONCALL@gmail.com. Also, if you want to reach me via Skype, my Skype ID is Franz Games. FRANZGMES. And of course, if you want to follow me on the Twitters, my account there is SFUONCALL. Same spelling. And you want to follow me on my personal account? My personal account is Paul Franz. That's PAULFRNZ. Just go to twitter.com/PaulFranz and you will find me. Note that I am an ardent Catholic and also very interested in tech. So that's two things you'll see me going on about. Also, I have a business account, which is Franz Games, FRANZGMES. And of course, this wonderful Talkcast gets into a podcast available on iTunes and various other feeds around the net. Some quick news from A to B this week. Steve Cole is busy working on FedCom booster number 38, also the SFB module SSJ3, Shadow of the Eagle. Patrick was also, of course, busy working on SFB updates and also that same module SSJ3. And also the Volume Master Starship book. Gene, again, working on Call to Arms Starfleet Book 2. And quick little personal news on the house front for Gene. She finally found a house that she's going to be purchasing with her fiancé. The spilling inspector found a few minor issues, but nothing that can't be easily fixed. Compared to the last one where there were all kinds of issues. Moving on to the SFB Online Tournament, which is the Sapphire Star 2 Tournament. Half of the round one games have been completed. That's 4 out of 8. 3 of those were on the one half and one of them on the other half. So that in theory, some of the people who got completed onto round 2, like Peter Bakia, who beat me, can move forward and go on to complete that game and keep things going at a relatively quick pace. And it's good to see that we've already got half the games done for the tournament that just started around a week and a half ago. Moving on to the library report. Unfortunately, no progress this week, but the complete conversion is at 2,519 with yet to be converted 811. Leaving the percent complete at 75.65%. And with that, that is the news for this week. And it's me, it's the one, the only Paul Franz, welcoming you to Starfleet Universe On Call. And tonight, we've got me, yeah, Dave, and of course, we have Barry. How you doing, Barry?
Hey there, how are you doing?
I'm doing good.
I guess tonight's topic of conversation is the Wrynn.
Yes, it is going to be the Wrynn, which is, I've been reading up on it, though I didn't have quite enough time to read up on it completely, but there are some
interesting... There's a lot of strange and special rules with it.
Oh, no kidding. Do they ever have some strange and special rules with it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
the weird part is, if you, we'll get into that, but you know, that's going to be the main topic for this evening. It's going to be the Wrynn, their systems and tactics involved in flying them. You know, one thing that we'll start off with this, which is, Unfortunately, I didn't get a chance to read up on the CC armor.
Yeah.
Just answer me this real quick question, Barry, which is, given that it's armor, I assume that means that it cannot be reinforced.
That is correct.
Okay. I just wanted to double check on that one, because I figure of anything, that's one of the more important things to know. Because of the big thing I noticed with the Wren right off the top of the bat was, obviously, they don't have much power. They have a big, at least the tournament cruiser that you created has all of 18 points of power. Okay, no, sorry, 14 points of power.
Yeah, 14 points of power.
14 points of power, yeah.
And six batteries.
And six batteries, okay.
Yeah.
Which seems fine. Given that it can't reinforce at all, it's interesting.
Yes. So those boxes labeled QT are quantum transporters. They are self-powered.
Yeah, which is
interesting,
because I read that and I'm like, okay, they're self-powered. They're not really energy per se, because they can't be used for. They don't actually generate power, so they can't be used for other systems, except for transporters.
Correct. Yes, they could be used as transporters. And boy, that ship could send a lot of boarding parties over.
Yep. Sorry. For those looking at me, I forgot to uncap my beautiful, beautiful camera. Hi. Things should look a little better now. For those watching on the video stream.
Mm-hmm. So, now the armor cannot be reinforced, but there is a way to repair it. And that's with the transporter collector beams. If they hit a ship and it does internal damage, one quarter of that damage, rounding down, gets redeposited back into the armor.
Right. And one thing to keep in mind, though, with that is that the that's actually internals, like for the Andromedans, that does not include degradation. So if there's degradation included in that, amount of damage, it will then, the degradation will not be included in that count of the 1/4.
Well, I don't think it, it's internals, not PAs. So if you destroy a PA panel itself, that's damage.
Right.
But if you, But the other thing is that the way the ship moves is you've got six of those banks. Each bank has five boxes. And those five boxes mean that every time you use the transporter, you move five hexes, up to five hexes.
Right. But you only can use each bank once every quarter turn.
Once per turn. Bank once per turn with a quarter impulse, a quarter turn delay between turns.
Okay, I did not read that portion.
Yeah.
Okay, can use during movement, during given turn, cannot be used for any purpose for a pass from subsequent turn. Oh, okay. Only once per turn. There it is.
So
I see it.
Yeah. So basically, you can pick any spot up to 5 hexes away in your FA arc, and poof, you're there.
Mm-hmm.
And immediately after you move, you can immediately turn one shield facing.
Okay, I missed that part.
You can also go into the rear arc, but I think you can only go 2 hexes.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so let me see if I understand this. Movement, there actually is the idea of forward movement and reverse movement with the transporters.
Yes. But you can only go half the number of hexes in reverse than you can forward. And okay. Reverse is in the RA arc, and forward is in the FA arc. But you could alternate forward and reverse.
Mm-hmm.
You could even transport within your same hex. And if you transport into the same hex as somebody else, you get to pick which shield you're off of them.
Huh.
Yeah, you can pick the relative positions of the two ships.
Huh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
The one thing I did notice that if you are outside of the Rin cluster, the Rin enclave, you have after you transport, you have 2 impulses of disrupted fire control.
Right. And that's why the tournament ship says tournament map is considered to be have a Rin sensor network. Because if you didn't have that, I think it really messes with your transporter missiles.
Right. Because that's one thing I was about to read up on, which was the Thames. I didn't get finished reading through that because of I wasn't sure if they were self-seeking or they weren't self-seeking, which means they required active fire control at all times, which meant, of course, that a Rin ship could not move if it's outside the Rin enclave and there's no sensor network at all.
Right.
Until
that's why I had to put it inside the sensor network.
Right.
And then so the transporter missiles basically they're actually pretty maneuverable. They move on the speed 6 chart. So whenever speed 6 objects move, they move.
The Thames?
And they transport the Thames. And what the Thames do is you set a primary range up to range 11. And they will try to maintain that range. And they have a transporter collector weapon that can fire once per turn under the control of the ship. So you basically say, I'm going to wait to fire that weapon until the optimal point and then fire it. It's got an FA arc, and it can actually repair the missile that it's on, and it fires at the 1 energy level setting.
Mm-hmm.
And the missiles have infinite endurance.
Okay.
And they take 7 damage points to destroy. And since it has a standoff weapon,
right,
you can basically launch them, and they're very difficult to take down because they sit at range from the enemy ship and just keep firing away.
Right, but...
So yeah. you launch two. Yeah. So after three turns, you might have six of them out there, each of them firing once per turn. It's like, that's a nasty weapon. It may not do that much damage, but unlike a drone, it keeps hitting and hitting and hitting.
Right.
It takes a lot to take them out.
That's so weird. Because also, obviously, because the TEMS actually are using the TCBs, I just was reading here where it says the TCB, well, it cannot restore CC armor on any ship, including the launch ship, which is a good thing, because if it could, that would be really annoying.
Yes, but it can repair itself.
Oy. So it can fire a TCB, and assuming that it gets internals, it can actually repair itself.
Correct.
Oy.
Yeah. Yeah. So you have that. The ship itself has three transporter collector beams,
right,
with 360-degree arcs. You put 1 to 4 energy in them, one turn arming, and zero hold cost, although it can only hold power for three turns, after which point the power goes away.
Right, right. But, of course... The question is,
yeah,
are you ever going to get the three turns? Really?
Right. You're going to be firing it more often than that.
All right. Right. Agreed.
Yeah. And.
Yeah. Actually,
another thing that.
There was one thing I didn't quite understand about the TCBs. Which is obviously they're designed to do internals and really rip your ship apart, and that's one way it can repair its own armor.
Right.
The one thing, let me see where was it? It said it. Right. The CCBs are transport technology and cannot operate through shields of a firing unit.
Which is why the Rin doesn't have shields.
Right.
It has armor.
Right. Now, the one thing that I'm Lord have mercy, this would have been awful, way too powerful, which was when it comes to Rin movement. And that is Rin movement, this is insane as it stands. Because it uses transport technology, it does not move during the movement phase. It moves during the shield transportation phase. But,
yes.
But fortunately, because this would really be highly annoying, which is fortunately, at the very least, it works after hit and run raids.
After what?
Hit and run raids. So you can do a hit and run raid, and then after that, then the Rin ship can actually move.
Yes.
So it's not...
Otherwise, it could transport...
Right. It could transport away before the hit and run raid actually would occur. Which would be highly...
Well... Annoying. But if you can do a hit and run raid on it. It can do a hit and run raid on you. And boy, does it have a lot of transporters. And it doesn't even have to plan for that. It's like, hey, I'm in range. You've got a down shield. Done.
That's true.
And I'm sending over a lot of boarding parties.
Agreed. So I don't think in tournament, well, at least in tournament play, I don't think there's boarding action. You can't, you can't do boarding actions. You only can do hit and run raids.
But you can do hit. Yeah.
Yeah, you can do a lot of hit and run raids, which is holy.
You can do 12 of them.
Right.
In one impulse.
Dang. Dang, man.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, one thing I didn't read up on the CC armor. I'm assuming that unless the armor is completely removed, you can't transport through it.
Yeah, you can.
Okay, you can. So, it's
armor. It's not shield.
Okay, so it doesn't have an ATF field.
No.
Okay.
That would be counterproductive since otherwise it couldn't move.
That is true.
Dang. Yeah. Yeah.
But question, what's T-Link?
Oh, that is for the Rin. Basically, when they're long range from Starbase, it can use the T-Link to bring supplies in from interstellar distances over a transporter link.
Wow.
In the scenario, it's only effective use, and it's basically a probe, but basically it's only effective use is it's one where it actually has to be powered.
Right.
With a fifth of a point of power. But you can use it as another transporter if you want one.
Now, here's the... Okay, I don't see anything marked on the SSD. But Rin, by their very nature, they have advanced transportation technology, which means the Rin can operate a transporter up to a range of 15 hexes. Not just the normal 5-hex limitation. They can do it from halfway across the freaking board. So you have a down shield. They can do a hit and run raid at range 15.
I missed that one. Holy crap.
Yeah, that's part of... I was reading on the... Actually, Rin Enclave in their description of the Empire. And I saw that and I went, holy freaking cow.
Yeah, wow.
They are otherwise operated in the same way as normal transporters.
Mm-hmm.
But they can be hastily repaired as normal transporters.
Yeah.
Dang, man. Okay. They also have some other things. All Rin are capable of movement through non-tactile warp using their impulse drives, yeah. Okay, but who cares? It's saying that it doesn't operate within the Rin Enclave, the impulse engines.
Yeah. Now, you would lose your 10 missiles if you did it, but... it has an interesting way of launching wild weasels. The shuttles have quantum transporters. So basically the shuttle launches via quantum transporter. And now those on the shuttles only have four hexes per shot. And there's a 16 impulse delay. And you can only use the onboard transporters on the shuttle twice, so it can, and it has an impulse engine, so that means it can transport twice and used an impulse for movement for a total of 9 hexes of movement from the shuttle. But the point is that when it launches, it can launch up to 4 hexes from the ship. Which makes for a very nasty wild weasel. Especially since the ships aren't moving. So it can be effectively going at speed 31 and launch a wild weasel.
In effect, because the thing is, the Rin don't actually move.
Right.
You know? Oh, so they just...
And also hop over an ESG.
Oy. And they have 6 of them.
Yeah.
They can do it 6 times a turn.
Right.
And they can move up to 5 hexes?
Yes.
Oy.
Now, there's a 4 impulse delay between when you use it. So if you don't move for the first couple of impulses on the turn, you can then effectively move over speed 31 for the rest of the turn.
Oh, crap. They're transporters.
Or you can move on impulse 1.
That's what I was just thinking about. Because they're transporters, they can move on impulse 1 when no other ship can. So there is no such thing as a hack and slash against a Rin. In theory, you can do it, but it requires that it's been within 4 impulses of them moving before. You know?
Yes. If they move in the last, if it moves on impulse 28, or later,
later than 28,
it
has to
be able to move on impulse 1.
Right.
Yeah, 29 or 30, it can't move on impulse 1. Right. But it can always tack.
Well, no,
you could be moving at high speed and still have your impulse tack.
That is true. But obviously, tacking is not available on impulse 1. So.
Yes. No. But if you can move on impulse 1, you can rotate because you can do a 0 hex
transport. Yeah.
It uses the whole bank, but you can then use that to turn. Of course, there's only 2 shield facings, and the transporter collector beams are 360. Really, its arc doesn't really matter. But what it could do is
okay. So
if it's close to you, it could change its position relative to you. So
right.
It's right in front of you, and then all of a sudden it's behind you, and you're still you're in hex with it, and it's in front of you, and then now it's behind you. Your accent slash doesn't work because it moves between movement and before firing. So it's like, okay, I got you lined up. Nope, you know.
So it has 40 box forward armor.
Yeah, that's not much.
Oh, I know. Trust me, I realize this because it is a 180 degree shield, basically, and a 40-point 180 degree shield is not great.
No. No.
Right, because you're comparing that
and,
to,
and it can re.
Continue.
And I think it can repair up to twice as many shield boxes as armor boxes originally had. So you've got 80 armor boxes.
Mm-hmm.
So you can do 160 boxes of repair, which is insane. I don't yeah, you wouldn't be able to pull that much stuff off of another ship, so that's not a limitation.
Right. Oh, agreed. And my assumption is that, okay, they're within the sensor network, the RIN sensor network, but they're outside the actual RIN enclave.
Correct. So you can't use it in collection mode.
Right. You can't use TCP in collection mode. Right. Yes.
Yeah.
That's the one thing I pointed out. That's why, the reason why I point that out.
Yeah.
But the one thing I definitely...
I don't think there's...
Yes.
I don't think the ship is balanced.
You think?
I think.
Yeah. Okay, they're showing... Okay, and they're... Any warp damage they're hit on. Okay. Just wanted to have an idea.
Yeah, that is nice.
Right.
They go away fast.
Right. And the reason why I wanted to know about that, because of the number of hexes they can move is limited by that bank, the size of the bank.
Mm-hmm.
So if it's a 5-point bank, it can move 5 hexes. If it's a 4 right. or 3, you know, that's only, it only can move 4 or 3 hexes.
Correct.
So obviously... The good thing about warp is one of those column A things. So you can get
yes.
Yeah, it's hard because of what is it, 9 and 5? Yeah, 5. 9 and 5 are the rolls.
Right.
To hit warp. Which aren't the greatest, but not bad either. So you know, they've got 6 forward hull, 6 rear hull. So they're not gonna protect the batteries that long, or even the APRs that long.
Right. Or impulse.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. It's
actually a very thin ship.
Right. Oh, agreed. Agreed. It needs that maneuverability to keep itself out of trouble. And obviously any captain worth his salt that knows about the Thames and how dangerous the Thames can be, they will destroy them on sight. You know, so you won't gather a collection of Thames.
Well, that's the problem, is that if you try to destroy the Thames on site, it's kind of difficult because, if you know, what happens if he sets the Thames to hang out at range 11?
Okay.
They take 7 points to destroy. At range 11, that takes a lot to take them out.
Agreed.
Sure, they don't do that much damage at that range. But they don't go away.
Yeah, they can fire once per turn. Yeah. But not within one term of previous firing. So it only can fire once every 32 impulses. So it's not like it can fire on impulse 32 and impulse 8. If it fires on impulse 32, it can't fire until impulse 32 again.
Correct. On the other hand, once it's ready to fire, it doesn't fire until you tell it to. So it can be sitting out there at range 11, puttering away, and you turn a down shield on the Thames. Gee, you've got all these Thames surrounding you, and you have a down shield, one of them's going to get... Oh, boom. Now it fires.
Yeah, and of course, that's one thing we have not even talked about, which is about one thing about the TCBs. And that is that if they hit a single box, one little itty bitty box, the amount of damage is reduced by like, is lower. But if it doesn't hit any shield at all, it's increased by like a third.
Yes.
That's approximate, you know. I looked at the chart, and the chart, let me show that lovely chart to people, which is right here.
Right.
And in that chart, for range 11, that's one thing. How much energy is for those TEMs? Is it like one point of energy?
So the TEMs, they fire at one energy level. Yeah. Right. If they fired at a higher energy level, they'd be insane.
Agreed. That's why I just wanted to make sure. Because obviously for range 8 to 11, it's 2 or 3 points of damage.
Yeah.
And if you get down to range 1, it's then 5 to 8.
Yeah. But still, 2 to 3 points of damage over time adds up.
Agreed. Okay, let me look at these again. So, the TEMs are not like normal seeking weapons, are they?
No.
In that they're like remote control weapons. Remote control TCBs.
You tell them what the range that you want it to maintain, and it will try to do its best to maintain at that range.
Okay.
But I think you have some control over it. And they can only transport into their FAR.
Right. When it moves to a point equal to its primary range.
They're nowhere near as maneuverable as a drone.
Okay.
What's that?
I was double checking on that. Which was one rule OFD 2.221, which is the attempt should be set to a primary range from the target, such as 4 hexes or any other range desired up to the max. The maximum setting is 8 hexes. So it can't be out the range 11.
When
the attempt moves, it must move to a point equal to the primary range if possible or as close to it as possible. However, beyond this, the TEM may move as only player wishes. Note that the TEM can fire from a range of 11 hexes, which may happen as a result of the target moving away from the missile before it can fire.
Right.
So, in other words, it can move to like a range 8 or close to range 8.
Yeah.
That's one thing that it did not mention, which is to say that it can move to range. There's no way it can move to like range 8. Let's just say 8 for the moment. But it can move to range 7 or range 9. Which one would it choose?
Mm-hmm.
Would it choose the closer or the farther? Well, because it doesn't mention in the rules which one it would choose. It said it as close as possible to the range that was given it.
Well, I don't see how you could have a circumstance where it could go to 7 or 9, but not 8.
True.
I don't think that'll happen. And remember, it doesn't have to go the full distance.
Right, actually, the only time I can see it is actually if there's going to be closer. In other words, you're in the corner on a non-floating map, like tournament map. Mm-hmm. Oh, shocker that we're talking about tournaments. And you set it to be like range 8, but it's stuck at like range 4. Because that's how close you are, and it can't move far away.
Right.
My question at that point, what would it do? Would it try to at that point try like to run against the wall to get out to range 8? Is that what it would do?
Well, what it could do is a range 0 jump with a turn.
Right. Oh, understood. But the point is that it's the goal of the TEM when it comes to movement is not to get closer to the target. It's to get to a certain range of the target. So to achieve that goal of getting to, let's say, range 8, and it's stuck at range 4, would it actually move as to, it would maintain range 4, but if it moved again, you know, next time it gets a chance to move, it can actually move out. If the target ship does not move, in theory, the TEM could actually move out to a range 8 or possibly even range 6. So, it's closer to its goal.
Yeah, so it would try to move. It would try to move away from the target.
Right. So it's possible that it might have to move, even though it might maintain the same range, but in an effort to get to a further distance at some point, it can start moving away from the target.
Yeah.
Which is that's so weird, because then I have to really read about the transport movement, because as part of transport movement, when you do transport movement, does it change? If you move more than one hex, as in you don't move 0, can you change facing?
Yeah. Yes.
Okay.
You move, then you turn.
Okay.
Up to one turn. Facing.
Okay, so this is the opposite of normal SFB rules, which is move and then you can turn after you move.
Right. This one, normal SFB, you turn and move. This,
right.
You move and turn.
Dang. And one thing I didn't look at, which is how many hex sides can it change facing? Just one?
One.
Okay.
Just one per move.
Per move. Yeah, I figured it was per move.
And it has 6 moves per turn. I can't remember how many hexes. I think it's 4 that it goes per move.
Well, before it comes to TEM?
4 or 5. Yeah.
I think it's 10 moves, 6 times per turn using the quantum transportation movement system, but cannot choose when to move. Execute their movement on speed 6.
Whenever speed 6 moves, it moves. Right.
Maximum number of hexes is 5 hexes. Each time it moves.
5 hexes. So it's basically a 30-speed drone.
Right. So it is a fast drone.
Yeah.
Okay, but fortunately, it only moves on a speed 6 chart. But the problem is, I'm thinking about the issue with an opponent trying to knock down a TEM.
Right.
And because what would happen is that if you set it up to say range 8, just for giggles.
Yeah.
If you would try to approach it, six. Let me think about this for a moment. I don't have it right now with me. Okay, 32 divided by 6 is around 7? Yeah, around 7, isn't it?
Yeah.
I'm approximating here because I know that the
No. 32 divided by 6 is roughly what, 5.5?
Yeah, 5. You're right, 5.5. So
every 5 or 6 impulses, it moves.
Right. So if it's out the range 8, you can you can possibly move up to a range of, let's say, 5. If you're flying, you can move up to a range 5, maybe 4. At that point,
well, that depends. If it's at range 8 and it's got you in a FA arc, it can only go forward. So it'll have a hard time maintaining distance. You can run it down.
Right.
Yeah.
That's true. If you hit directly for towards the TEM, you're going to close the range and it has to go forward.
Right.
Well, the forward direction. Because it could go
in the FA arc.
Right. Because it can turn to one hex side, and assuming that it's coming directly at you, that's facing directly at you,
it can turn. But then its movement can be on the FA arc.
Right. Well, that's what I was pointing out, which was that you can turn it from, let's say, it's coming directly down D, direction D. It can then change to, actually, no, it's after. So it would have to fly past you and then turn.
Right.
Yikes.
But it, what it could do is it could go in the FA arc. So let's say you're in direction D from it. It could go C or E for 5 hexes and then turn.
Right. So what you'd actually want to do in that case is, as the RIN player, you would never ever want to have your TEMs so they go directly at your opponent or face directly at your opponent.
Correct.
You'd want to always have them basically going off shield number 6 or shield number 2.
Yes.
Yeah. At least that facing there.
Yeah.
Okay. So, yikes.
But, yeah, I know.
Well, the thing is, the thing is that the TEMs are basically, as you pointed out, they're remote weapons is what they are.
Yeah.
Yes, you set the range that you want to keep them at. And they'll move to maintain that range. And you get to control when they actually fire. Now, obviously, the big issue with them is that they only fire once a turn. And most importantly, they only can fire within... you have to wait at least 32 impulses before you can fire again.
Yeah, but here's the thing. It takes more damage to destroy it than a large drone. You fire two per, you launch two per turn, and then it is almost guaranteed to get at least one hit in before you destroy it.
Oh, agreed. Oh, I agree there.
Yeah, so in that sense, you can destroy it, but it's probably going to be tougher to destroy than a large drone because...
I agree because it's wanting to keep at range. It's not going to try and close in on you, unless as a RIN player you do something.
One other thing is that if you can tractor it, it cannot use its quantum transporters anymore.
Oh, okay.
That shuts them down.
As soon as you can get that close. You have to get to range 3.
Well, you got to get to range 3, and that's a lot of power, but then all of a sudden you shut it down. But then you could let it, and then once the speed 6s move, you can release it from the tractor and run in on it. Of course, if you're spending all your maneuver trying to take down a lowly 10,
Barry, this is the same issue with shuttles. They will.
Yeah.
You can't completely ignore them either.
Yeah, I know.
Because just like shuttles, when you're doing a knife fight, they will eat you alive. They will They will ting you.
Oh, I
ting,
know.
Ting, ting. I still remember when I think it was a Celtorian. I think it was against a Zindi, I think it was. But basically, we got ourselves into basically a knife fight. And unfortunately, mm-hmm. he had three shuttles going round and round and round. And he kept on going, bink! Three points of damage. And it wasn't always on a down shield either. But it added up.
Yeah.
To the degree
oh, yes, it does.
Where I could no longer completely ignore it. I had to, you know, spend fire, which I would really prefer fire at my opponent's ship. I had to fire at his shuttles to knock down those stinking little phaser threes that kept on firing at me every single turn. And that's the same.
Yeah.
And I think the TEM is going to be the same situation. You can't ignore them for long because they will just eat you right. up.
But that ship has 10 of them.
Right.
In the racks.
Right.
And yeah.
The racks hold 10?
Plus its shuttles. Well, 5 in each rack.
Okay.
2 racks. Mm-hmm. Plus it's got its 4 shuttles, which fortunately cannot be used as suicides.
Yeah, that would be nuts.
Yeah. Oh, I'm at range 4 from you.
But the good thing is that,
it doesn't have warp power, so it can't.
Right, but it still has the quantum transportation technology to move.
But yeah,
which is interesting because of it can, according to you, I can't find the section of the rules. It says this, but I will defer to you, and that is that shuttles, when they're launched, can go basically 4 hexes away from the ship.
Which, yeah, they launch by quantum transporter.
Right, which makes things quite interesting. Well, they launch by quantum transporter? Or is it that the shuttle moves by quantum transporter?
They have the quantum transporter. And they launch by using their quantum transporter for the first jump.
Okay, that's weird. I mean, to me, it's weird when it comes to using wild weasels. Because normally, as part of launching the wild weasel, you have to basically turn off fire control. And if you turn off fire control, you can't transport.
Well, it's the quantum transporter on the shuttle itself that launches it.
That's what I was thinking.
Yeah.
But the way you were saying it, like the ship itself was launching it using its
No.
Yeah. But that's the way you were talking.
Yeah, sorry.
That's okay. Yeah. Just want to make sure it was
once,
clear.
Once you launch the weasel, you can't use your quantum transporters without voiding the weasel.
Oh, yeah. Agreed.
The weasel can use its quantum transporters.
Right. At that point, you are stuck. Until you get...
Right.
And you can't move again until your fire control is completely up. Which actually... Huh. Right.
Right.
Does I assume that the RIN sensor network does not affect the normal effects of the wild weasel, does not lessen the effects of wild weasel, i.e. when you have to turn off fire control and then turn it back on versus the effects of transportation, which disrupts your fire control for 2 impulses if you're not within the RIN sensor network.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. It. Yeah, you have to have normal fire control up to even use the Ring sensor network.
Mm-hmm. Right. Understood. So,
but it, but you can also yo-yo with that thing. So let's say that you launch the Weasel 4 hexes away from you.
Right.
Okay. And the seeking weapon goes past you towards the Weasel.
Mm-hmm.
And it's gotten 3 hexes from you, and you activate your fire control. So now all of a sudden that you voided the Weasel and the seeking weapon has to turn around to get you. But by the time it gets you, you may not have been able to, you may have had to launch the Weasel because you couldn't transport again.
Right.
But now you've had the seeking weapon go after the Weasel. But before it can hit the Weasel, you activate fire control. Not, but you're all of a sudden you can maneuver. So the seeking weapon turns around, comes back at you, and you hop over it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, agreed. It definitely can mess with it greatly. Now, obviously, if you want to use the Wild Weasel as in a standard approach, i.e. have the seeking weapons hit the Wild Weasel, you'd have to make sure that when you launch it, that either the shuttle stays within the same hex, which it could, and just, you know, do the whole, you know, whatever direction it launches, that's the shield that's going to be, any damage is going to happen on, or you can actually have it launch, you know, launch out to range one, so that the plasma or whatever, you know, drone or whatever seeking weapons is heading towards it will immediately implode on it.
Yeah.
The next impulse. So, you know.
But the point is that you could have it launch 4 hexes away from you, and then the seeking weapon turns around, it goes towards it, and just before it hits, you start activating your fire control, and the seeking weapon turns around, and before it hits you, you hop over your Weasel, grab it in a tractor, yank it back on board, and by the time the seeking weapon gets you, you can pop again and stay ahead of it.
True, but that has to be a whole brand new Weasel, too. You only gonna do it so many times.
Yeah, not. Well, yeah, but now you've recovered your Weasel.
Mm-hmm. Oh, agreed. That basically,
now it may take you a turn or two to get it ready again for action.
Right,
but you've got it again.
Right. Oh, I agree that it provides definitely an interesting tactic, which will allow you to basically reuse Wild Weasels and therefore not have to worry about the whole issue of running out of shuttles.
Right.
Now, of course, at the same time, that assumes that your opponent is not barreling in on you.
Yeah.
Because if you do that when your opponent is barreling in on you, you might not do that.
No.
Because of to jump over it, you have to go in the direction that is going to be towards the missile, and that means you have to be facing towards that missile.
No, here's the thing. So let's say you launch the Weasel,
mm-hmm.
and the drone or plasma goes after the Weasel,
mm-hmm.
but it takes 3 impulses to get there.
Right.
And by the time it does, so just before it reaches the Weasel, you start your activation of fire control, which mm-hmm. takes 4 impulses. By the time the drone or plasma turns around
right.
and gets to you, you can hop five hexes in the it basically hop over the drone or plasma, causing it to have to het again.
Well, it can't het
or
again.
Or if it's already used its het,
yeah,
it can't. So it has to take time to turn around again, by which point you've tractored your shuttle, brought it on board, and you cycled again, and you can...
Okay, but to do the, I'm thinking about how that would work in, you know, logistics wise. That means basically what would have to happen is that you'd have to launch a Wild Weasel in basically in front. Okay, one, the missile would have to be chasing you. That's number one.
Mm-hmm.
Because of you'd want to launch your shuttle in front of you so it goes past you and goes towards that shuttle. And then when it gets close to the shuttle, then you activate your fire control, in which case the seeking weapon will then want to het and move towards you.
Yep.
Okay. But okay.
Now, the downside of that is that if you use a Wild Weasel, you lose all your chems that are out.
Right. Right, but that is what it is, you know.
Yeah.
That's one of the reasons why you wouldn't want to use a Wild Weasel. You'd want to rely on your speed, because that's the two options. That's the question. It's always the question when you're facing an opponent with seeking weapons. How do you want to deal with their seeking weapons? Do you want to deal with their seeking weapons using speed and using your phasers and your speed alone to outmaneuver and destroy the seeking weapons that are coming towards you? Or do you want to rely on the sit and spin method where you use a Wild Weasel after there's a certain number amount of seeking weapons coming towards you?
Right.
That's the question. And that's the question I every single time that I play against a seeking weapon person, whether it's plasma, drone, or whatever other seeking weapons that my opponent might be using, that's always a question that I ask. How do I want to deal with the seeking weapons this time?
Yeah. Because the phaser array on that ship is nothing to write home about.
Oh, agreed. You got six phaser ones and two phaser twos, and two phaser twos in rear extended arc. And the phaser ones are front arc right and front arc left. And that is three of each. So that if someone gets behind you, you ain't got much except for the TEMs to fight your opponent off with.
And your TCBs are 360.
Right. I forgot your three TCBs. So that is something to fight your opponent off with, especially since it's a single turn arming weapon, which can be used 1 to 4 points of power. Yikes.
Yeah.
But fortunately, they don't.
Now, here's the other thing.
Mm-hmm.
If your opponent gets right behind you, you can use the QTs to go backwards.
Right. But you only can go backwards two hexes.
Correct. But that could get you into the firing arc of all your phasers.
True. But that requires also that your opponent be that close to you. And if he's that close to you, too late. I'm willing to bet that your opponent is going to definitely look at the timing of when you can transport.
Yeah.
And possibly
it is very easy to pick. It's very easy for that ship to pick which shield it's going to be on for its opponent.
Yeah, to a certain degree, yeah.
You have a down shield and you're within 5 hexes of me in my FAR. Poof, I'm on your down shield.
Yeah, but at the same time, poof, within you're within the down shield to a certain degree. And that is that, yes, you can get to my down shield, but the question is how many weapons are you going to have available to you on that down shield?
I move and turn.
Oh. No,
and I move anywhere with it.
Oh,
yeah.
Understood. But, again, yeah.
Remember, I can pick where in the hex I end up.
Yeah, but at the same time,
in your own,
you can turn, but you're not gonna get. It might not be in the FA arc. It's probably the right arc or the left arc. If you're trying to get to the opposite shield.
Yeah.
So you're
well, right or left still gives me. 5 phasers, the 2 3P1s and 2P2s.
Right.
Plus the 3 TCBs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the quantum phasers, which are pretty good.
Yeah. No, they're shit. Quantum phasers are not that powerful.
Oh, understood. See if we can. Quantums. Okay, I'm just trying to look for the quantum phaser chart. I'm looking out on SSDs. If I have to, I will fall back to my rule book. I'll probably have to do that. Oh, there it is. No, here they are. Prober. Those are quantums, right? Yeah, phaser Q1 and Q2.
Yeah.
Not
it's
bad.
More of a longer range weapon.
Yeah. Agreed.
A short range, they're not to write home about. The only good thing about them is they kind of ignore wild weasels.
Wait a minute. Why they ignore wild weasels?
Well, they have built-in ECCM.
Look.
So it lessens the effect of the wild weasel.
Oh, the quantum phasers.
Yes.
Oh, okay. Did not know that.
Yeah.
Gotta keep that in mind.
One of the few nice.
Yes. That's a very nice feature.
Well, one of the, they're longer range and they negate some of the effects of the weasel. But other than that, they don't do that much. They're not as powerful as an alpha phaser.
Right. Well, it's not. Oh, okay. I was thinking about also cloak, but in the Omega Octant, there is no cloak.
There's the Soldier phase,
right?
Dimensional
right.
Phase
yeah,
device,
but they don't quite work the same way as cloak.
Yeah,
you know, with the whole ECM shift stuff. So,
during the phase out, they do.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess Scott never made it tonight.
Yeah. I've been keeping an eye out for any call-ins, and there was no call-ins. Sorry. But, you know, it is what it is.
Right. Yeah.
So, the Rin definitely is an interesting ship to fly or fly against because of basically jerky movement is what it comes down to.
Yeah.
That, you know, it moves, then it moves, then it moves. Well, it moves, then it doesn't move. It moves, then it doesn't move. But, you know, it, as I said, it's jerky movement. It moves up to, what, 5 hexes?
Yes.
So it can move up to 5 hexes, and then...
And then it's stuck in place for 4 impulses.
Right. So it can't move again for 4 impulses, and then while your opponent will use traditional movement, and it will be slowly creeping up on you.
Yeah.
Oh man, that'd be awful. That'd be awful. I was thinking about a Rin Civil War. That, my friend, would be a weird battle. Because, and here's the thing:
quarter collector beams are more effective against another Rin for rebuilding your ceramic armor, CC armor.
Right. And here's the funny part: is that each and every time that go up the transporter and you're both able to transport, i.e. move, it's no longer, there's no order of precedence anymore.
It's simultaneous movement.
It's simultaneous movement. Always.
Yes.
So you're always guessing what your opponent's going to do.
Almost like plotted.
Yeah, exactly. Which to me, I think is kind of cool in that regard, in that it's like plotted movement.
It is.
But at the same time, it really makes it much harder to play against your opponent, which not to say that any civil war is easy, because most civil wars are not easy at all, because you're playing against your reflection. Yeah. You know, I'm talking about pure civil wars. I'm not talking about this whole like Romulan King Eagle tournament, King Eagle versus a Romulan tournament Firehawk. Yeah, it's a civil war, but similar technology, you know, same technologies that are available, same, you know, empire, but it's not really.
Speaking about which, have you had any more rounds in your battle?
Yeah, I lost.
Oh.
I got close. The one thing that Peter was hoping I did, and I didn't have the power to do, which was that we were on the last turn, the previous last turn, he put up a web, he cast a web. And it's like, okay, fine, cast the web. So I planned on chasing him around the other side of the board at the end of the turn. Beginning of turn, what he did was that he dove into his web. So he was going to get like on my rear shields because of the way the web was set up. Because it was kind of a stepped web. So I went, okay, fine.
Yeah, a W.
That's fine. Go ahead and do that. So I headed. I went, okay, I'm going to head. There's only one minor problem with a head. When I headed, after I headed, I didn't have enough power in my batteries to complete the R.
Oh, crap.
Yeah, because I had a choice. I could either not complete the R or I could het. And I figured the better part of valor was actually doing the het. I didn't complete the R, which wasn't totally bad. The bad part was that he had weasels available and he was expecting me to basically tractor him. But the thing is, I was not expecting him to dive into his web. And that is my fault, because I could have seen it, but I was predicting what he was going to do in the current situation, given the past history of this game, because the past history of the game was we're going round and round the web, circles around the web. I figured that's what he was going to go back to doing. But no, he decides to turn in. He doesn't have to do another hit, but he turns in. And I went, okay, well, the best thing for me to do is actually hit. And I headed so that I had a brand spanking new shield available to him.
Mm-hmm.
And I got to range one. Unfortunately, I was in the web at that point. It didn't solidify until after I got to the web hex. So, and I had doing ED, because I figured, get round range one. Unfortunately, this is one of those times when I should have read the rules on webs, and I did not realize that any seeking weapon that's launched out of a web hex is stuck in the web. Until the web goes bye-bye. So you can fire in and out.
Or until it exceeds the strength. Or it exceeds the strength of the web.
Right. And, what happened is he casted, he had the one web from the previous turn. Then the next turn, he cast another web. It was like a three-hex web, which was extremely strong. It was like strength 16. So I was, and he mentioned to me that I was going to break down. I had a possibility of breaking down when I ran into the web. And at that point, even before he even mentioned that, I was planning on stopping, but I did not know that a seeking weapons would be stuck in the web. Because of I was, and after he told me that, then I'm okay, fine, great. I started adding on to what's stuck in the web. I had two suicide shuttles, and I had a plasma S, but it actually should have been a plasma G, because I only put 3 points of power into the final turn of army, not realizing that actually was a plasma G. But didn't matter anyway. Because he launched a wild weasel, and I didn't have anything in tractor, so I couldn't have tractored him. And as is, he had 5 points of power already into anti-tractor available for him.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, crap. So I would. It's like, where was I going to find all the power to do this? To complete the turn arming for the R, to fire my phasers, to het and to tractor, I had no energy. I didn't have that much energy to do that. Yes, I didn't have the main internals. I was one off my power, but the big issue was firing the phasers, because the previous turn is when I had previous turn, no.
Used them.
No. The turn before that, I used them. And did I use the previous turn? I did not use them. I was thinking about using them, and I didn't use them. Well, I couldn't use them because of they were out of arc. And I got them in arc, but they were facing his 22 box, shield number 5, and I went, what's the point?
Right.
So the next turn, actually, I got a nice shot on his really weak shield number six, which was only two box shield. But unfortunately, he just bopped me. First with his phasers and his disruptors. Then as we got close, he was firing his phaser threes at me. And finally, I had no plasmas left by the time that was done. I had knocked out all my phaser ones because of I had used the phaser once. Like this is the end game. This is the turn that will decide everything. So if I would have saved the phaser once and knocked out my phaser threes, in which case I would have no additional damage I could have done to him. So you know I was able to get some additional damage to him using my phaser threes.
Yeah.
That are facing his ship. So you know, that's why I was saving the phaser threes. I would say, okay, knock out my phaser ones, knock out my phaser ones. I already used them. And Lord knows that this is going to be the turn. Either I win or I lose. That there was no let's go on, we're gonna go on to the next turn. No. There was no next turn. Period.
Right.
And Peter was still hopeful that I was going to pull it out. And unfortunately, as the big issue, when he finally saw my EA, he went, oh, that's where your power went. It went into phasers. It's like, yeah, that's where all my power went was phasers. Now, I accidentally screwed my EA on the previous turn. But fortunately, I didn't cheat or anything. Instead of putting 2 points of power into phasers, I accidentally discharged 4 points of battery, which started with 0 points of energy in my batteries. I've got to fix that. That should be illegal. I need to add a check on that so that you can't do that by accident, which is what I did.
Yeah.
So at the end, I was like,
I hate to say this, but I'm like falling asleep.
Okay. Okay. Let me just finish up real quick.
Yeah. I'm sorry.
No, that's fine. So at the end, you know, I had 4 points. I'm looking at my EA starting the next turn. I went, why do I have 4 points extra power? Then I looked at it and I went, oh, okay. I'm actually discharged four batteries and I didn't have the power. Then, oh yeah, that was supposed to be for phasers. So I was like, oh, okay. So I actually I put in my phasers and they're fine. We're good and so forth. So that was it. So I'll let you go. Barry, it's always a pleasure.
Hey.
Okay, you have a good night.
Yeah, same here.
Okay.
Good night. Bye.
So had a nice little discussion with Barry about the Rin and little quick update on how poorly I did. Actually, I didn't do poorly in the TKE. It actually was a really good game. Peter did that. Actually, Russ started created a video of it. I've not looked at it, Russ. I'm sorry, I did not have a chance to look at it before I did the podcast. What I'm hoping to do is either add it into the podcast itself, or possibly put it in a podcast feed. I have to check with Russ exactly on if he will allow me to do that or not. I'll just have to wait and see on that regards. And with that, I am Paul Franz, and I bid you a good night.